Okay, we are in this interesting position that last week we did not have Shir because it was Kristallnacht. Next week we won't have the Shir because Erev Thanksgiving I am taking off. So we have a Shir now, and then we'll have a Shir again in 2 weeks, but hopefully the Shir will be memorable enough that you'll be able to go 2 weeks without the Shir and still remember what we were up to. We're basically in the middle of segments in the Navi regarding Elisha. The last thing that we learned, very interestingly, was about how they had this episode when the soldiers of Aram are finding out that how come every time the king of Aram gets so upset, like every time I have a plan, so I want to attack the Jews, and suddenly wherever I go to camp, so they find out. So they say, oh, you know, it's Elisha, and he's whispering. So they say, oh, let's go and get Elisha, and it turns out that the soldiers of Aram ended up going blind. They end up in the middle of the city of Shomron. The people say, let's kill these soldiers of Aram. And Elisha says, no, don't kill them. Don't kill them. We only kill those who are combatants. We don't kill those who are not combatants. That's the basic story that we learned last time. Now, until now, Aram is the main enemy of the Jews. And Aram, I would say, is rather a nuisance. No? Aram is a nuisance. They're a pain. They are annoying. They are going at the border cities and taking people away. They're capturing certain communities. But it's a pain. It's a nuisance. It's annoying. Now, in Pasuk, Chaf Dalet of chapter Vav. We stopped over here, middle of the Perek, just because it works better for what we plan on doing tonight. Now we end up seeing, Vayhi Achrechem, Vayikbots Ben Hadad Melech Aram Eskol Machanehu, Vayya'al Vayyatzar Al Shomron. This is big. In other words, Ben Hadad, the king of Aram, gathers a massive force, Kol Machanehu, where his entire army is gathered, Vaya'al Vayatzar al Shomron. He goes and he besieges the city of Shomron. Shomron is the capital. So what we have now is a foreign army is surrounding and besieging the capital. That is much more than just a nuisance, no? You are now in deep, deep water. Okay. Now, what happened because of the siege is Vayhi Ra'av Gadol B'Shomron Hinei Tzarim Aleha. There is a huge famine because of this siege. Ad Hayos Rosh Chamor B'Shmonim Kesef V'Rova Hakab Char Yonim B'Chamishia Kesef. Okay, the siege is so serious. The famine is so intense that the head of a donkey sells for 80 silver coins, and a quarter of a measure of dove's dung sells for 15 silver coins. Sells for, excuse me, 5 silver coins. Now, what? So what is dung? What are they doing with it? And
fuel.
Fuel. That's one possibility. If you're looking at the Radak, I give you the Radak on the last page. So Radak has two explanations. One explanation is that they are using it as fuel. Okay. Right, the Radak, it says Char Yonim, and that's a quote from the Radak. Right, Hayonim Shabbos. It's hard for me to read in this version. But basically, explanation number one is that it is fuel. Explanation number two of the Radak is he quotes from his father, and his father says that what's going on is that the people are able to extract food from the dung of the doves. Now, remember, we have a famine. The famine is caused by a siege. That means there's no food in the city. But there's tons of food outside. If I'm a bird, I fly out, I get food, no? The food, right, and especially if you are a dove, not that I'm such an expert on doves and their nutrition patterns, but apparently when a dove eats a lot of food, it just stays in the dove, and it doesn't get digested, and they can get the food out of the dung of the dove, not to be too gross, but it's really gross. Now, what is going on over here is two vivid images of the intensity of the famine. One, the head of a donkey sells for 80 silver coins. Is the head of a donkey food?
Only in the worst of times.
Right? Only in the worst of times. First of all, it ain't kosher, okay. Second of all, right, the meat of a donkey is meat, no? It might not be good meat. Donkeys are muscular animals, right? Donkeys schlep a lot of heavy stuff. You don't want to eat donkey meat. Now, it's probably 10 times worse than horse meat. The head of a donkey, for sure, has no, right, real food value, but that's what's going on. This famine is tremendously intense. Let's go on. Vayihi melech Yisrael over al hachoma. V'ishar tzaka elav lemar hoshia adoni hamelech. Very moving story. A woman screams out. She says, King, please save. Vayomer, Al Yoshi'ech Hashem, Me'ayin Oshi'ech, Hamin Hagorin Omin Hayakev. Right? The king responds, right? Apparently there's intense hunger. A woman sees the king walking. She says, King, save me. So he says, well, if God won't save you, how am I going to save you? Ve'hamin Hagorin Omin Hayakev. Is there anything in the wine press, in the oil press? There ain't no food. Yeah. What? The king of Israel.
What is name?
What? So this is the king Yehoram, the son of Ahab. Right? So Yehoram, the son of Ahab, is passing by. And he says, how am I going to save you if God won't save you? So the king says, so Vayomer la, right? So then he says, what's up? Now, originally, the king says, I can't save you. But then he changes his tune a bit. And he says, hey, well, what's the problem exactly? So the woman says, here's the story. This other woman said, you give your son, we'll eat him today. I'll give my son tomorrow. We cooked my son, we ate him. And I told her the next day, give me your son, and we should eat your son. But instead, she hid her son. Now, there's a dispute between two women and the son. Two women about, should you give over the son? She hid her son rather than hand him over. Okay? Now, this woman has admitted to the king, by the way, about her cannibalism.
Yeah.
Right? This is very depraved. But hunger is intense. Now, let's just take this story a step further. Two sons. We ate one. This other woman hid the son. Did she hide a live boy or a dead boy?
Oh, God.
Yeah. Which is worse, by the way? What? Did she hide her son when the son is alive?
To say,
or did she hide her son when he's dead already?
Not to share.
If you hide a son when he's dead, you're saying, I'm not going to share my boy with you, I'm going to eat him all myself. But if you hide your son when he's alive, in some ways it's even worse. Because that means that what they're planning on doing is killing the kid in order to eat it. If you hide a dead son, right, think about it. No?
The end result is going to be the same. Why hide?
And the end result, but it's much worse. You see, pardon me, but to eat a corpse because you're starving to death is much worse, is much, I'd say, better. To eat a corpse is much better than to kill somebody and then eat him.
What is a corpse?
Right? You find, if it's a dead boy and she hides her dead son and she wants to eat it herself, so you could say, okay, it's bad, it's gross, disgusting.
It's not sharing.
Right? It's not sharing, right, obviously, but okay. It's much worse if she's hiding a live son, because that means that the other, that yesterday's lunch was a boy who we killed.
Unless she's hiding him to save his life. You know, that's the third possibility.
From the story, you get the impression that it's not to save the life, it's, right? But at whatever it is, we are trying to depict
very bad.
Extremely bad conditions. Now, this interesting thing is, this story somewhat resembles the story of Shlomo and the two mothers fighting about whose baby it is, no? That great Solomonic decision, right? About chop him in half, etc. Right? This almost sounds as bad. These are not people who are generally, these are cannibals. Now, what happens when the king hears this? Terrible story. What does that mean? Right? The king hears what this woman said. He rips his garments. Now, ripping garments is a sign of mourning. He's still walking on the wall. He's walking on the wall, presumably, to look at the city's fortifications to see how they are doing against the siege. And everyone sees, and there is sackcloth on the king inside. Right? When he rips his clothing, apparently he's wearing his kingly vestments, right? And he rips it, and underneath they see he's wearing sackcloth. That means that the king recognizes the suffering of the people. Right? Not only is he moved emotionally to rip his clothing because of the story he heard, but he was beforehand, he was wearing sackcloth. Now, Chazal say, very interestingly, Yehoram ben Achav is not supposed to be a great figure. Look at the last source I give you. Gemara in Tanya stuff, Yadal Ramad Beis. I'm Reb Elazar. Ein adam chashuv rashai lachkar sak, elam kin ne'ene ki horam ben Achav. Shenema ve'yigish lamah, hasu ve'yishav ha'kas, v'gadav v'over lachomah, v'yah ha'am v'hinei ha'sak ha'psarel. You're not allowed to do things which are presumptuous. You're not allowed to do what's called yuhara, no? And to wear sackcloth is not proper unless you know for sure you'll be answered. And the one person, right, again, it's a...
Who knows?
So usually you don't know, and basically Chazal saying, don't wear sackcloth. Right? The only person who's the good example of being answered is Yehoram, the son of Achav. Right? What that means is understood in two ways. Why is it that Yehoram ben Achav was sure he'd be answered? So one approach is, and the book Musar HaNevi'im says this, that Yehoram ben Achav realized that everyone is suffering, and we have statements in Chazal that Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moeis Tefilas and Sharabim. When the community, when everyone prays, so God will listen for sure. Okay, so that could be what's going on. He knew God would answer because the whole community is in pain. Alternatively, it could be that Yehoram ben Achav, who's not a good figure, right? Not a good figure. He's a Rasha. But maybe what Chazal is saying is that he's a Rasha on the outside, but inside he's good. This image that he has sackcloth underneath, right? Seems like, you know what, on the outside he's wearing his royal robes. Everyone else is suffering, they're eating yogurt, he's wearing royal robes. But when he rips it, when he's moved, you see he's wearing sackcloth, that means he's not a bad guy. Part of the lesson that we're going to be talking about tonight is that sometimes people who look bad are good, and people who look good are bad. Right? And part of that lesson is Yehoram ben Achav. Let's go on. Let's see a little bit more about this.
Complicated.
Yes. Now, how does the king react? So the king reacts by saying, here, Pasuk Lamed, Pasuk Lamanah, by Yomer. Ko yasali Elohim b'chol yosifim yamod rosh Elisha ben Shafat alav hayom. He says, I'm going to kill Elisha. Now, this doesn't sound good, right? This don't sound good. Why would he try to kill Elisha? So Rashi and the Radak learn he wants to kill Elisha because Elisha was supposed to daven. Remember, one of the interesting things you notice about Elisha is that he's not so into prayer. And the king is saying, hey, Elisha, you're the prophet. You should be davening. You're not davening. That's why the king says you should die. There's another explanation, though, going back to what we saw at the beginning of Perek Vav, that we mentioned in our introduction tonight. If you remember, the king of Aram, right, is all upset. How come his plans to attack the Jews keep on being foiled? He finds out it's Elisha. He sends a group of soldiers to attack Elisha. They end up getting blinded. They end up in the city of Shomron. Elisha says, don't kill them. Comes along the king of Yisrael, and he says, Elisha, you are supposed to kill them. You have this army of Aram people. You could have killed them. You decided not to. And now look what we're going through. The city is besieged. We're suffering. You should have killed them when you had the chance. And that's why he says, I'm going to get that Elisha. Oh boy. I'm going to... Right? Why? Because he shouldn't have allowed this to go on. He should have killed them. Now, what's Elisha doing? Pasuk Lamed Beis. Right? Elisha yoshev beveso v'haz kenim yoshvim ito. Who usually hangs out with Elisha? Who hangs out with Elisha usually? Who are Elisha's companions? Usually they are the B'nai HaNevi'im, the young students. Over here we see Elisha in a different light. Has the Kenim Yoshvim Ito. Who are the Zakenim? The older, like members of the Sanhedrin, the Talmidei Chachamim, the leaders, right? And Vayishlach Ishmael Fanav, Etan Yavo HaMalach Ilav, Bo Amar HaZakenim, Ha'item Ki Shalat Ben HaMratzei Chazel Asir Toshi, Ve'u Ki Vo HaMalach Sigra Dalat, Basically, he says, you know what, the king is coming, this murderer, the son of the murderer is coming to get me, don't let him in. Right? While he's speaking, the messenger came, and he says, oh, you know what, it happened from God, what can I do? Right? Now, it's very hard to understand exactly what's going on, but you see a little bit of a change in the king. The king says, I'm going to kill Elisha. Elisha tells the senior people, the Zakenim, oh, he's going to get me, he's trying to kill me. Right, don't let him in. The king shows up, he says, you know what? God said this should happen. Right, it comes from God, what are we going to do? Right, the king ends up coming across not so bad when all is said and done. He says, oh, it all came from God, my, etc.
But what does he mean? The whole
decision
was in the Lord. Why should I wait for the Lord any longer? What's that part about?
In other words,
why should I wait for God any longer?
He's basically saying, listen, God is sending us a message. What can we do? God is sending us a message. It's very hard to understand these psukim. There are many different explanations. I'm reading it like the king is saying that, you know, Hashem sent this. What can we do? It's a tragedy we have to go through. That's the way it is. Okay. Now, the next chapter continues on the theme of the famine. And the next chapter is famous because it's the Haftorah for Parashas Tazria. No? Here, let's just go on. First, Elisha says, listen to what God said. Vayom Elisha. Now, if sometimes the chapter break messes things up. Because the king is saying, this is a tragedy, it happened from God. Elisha says, Zarzachnish, don't worry so much. God said to me that tomorrow at this time, right, there is going to be a sa'ah of solat b'shekel, right, a full measure of fine flour for one shekel, two measures of barley for a shekel, and you can buy it, no problem. Now, the captain says, hey, Elisha, what are you telling me? Is God going to make windows from heaven? Is this score going to come down? How will this happen? Right? So Elisha responds, you'll see, not only will you see, you're not going to eat anything. Right? You, ye of little faith. Ye of little faith, you'll see it, but you're not going to eat it. Right? Break. Now, effectively what's going on is precisely, like the king saying we're suffering, Elisha says everything will be okay. This captain says, come on, how's it going to happen? Elisha says, it's going to happen. Right, da-da-da, ready? What? You drum roll, exactly. Now, the story goes that there are four anashim, arba anashim, four men who are mitzora'im petach ha-sha'ar. Four people are a mitzora. A mitzora, the Torah says, has to be outside of the city. Who are these four people? Who, by the way, do we know who had tzara'at?
Naaman,
but he was cured. And who got the tzara'at of Naaman?
Gehazi,
Elisha's not trusted servant. Gehazi got the tzara'at, and Gehazi had three sons. So Chazal say the four people outside of the city are Gehazi and his three sons. They have tzara'at. You have tzara'at, you can't be in the city. And they tell each other, we are in a dilemma. Difficult situation. We stay over here, we die. If we go to the city, there's a famine in the city, we die. If we stay here, we die. What we'll do is, L'chu v'nipla machane Aram, imichayunu nifye, imiyutunu v'matnu. Let's go to the camp of Aram. Right? They'll let us live, or if they kill us, what do we lose anyway? Because we're going to die. Again, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah of Zion has a discussion about, what about Chayei Shah? Maybe you should try to keep yourself alive at every moment. How can you try to go to the camp? So the answer is in the situation of the Safek, you're allowed to take this option. You're allowed to say, hey, right, we're going to definitely die over here. There's a chance that we'll live. If we go there, they'll try to live. That's what the Gemara says. Fairly obvious. So, these four fellows get up early morning to go to the camp of Aram. They get to the edge of the camp and no one is there. God hishmiya machane Aram ko rechev kosus ko chayo gadol vayomer ishalachiv hinei sachar alenu mafkisat malchei achitim malchei mitzayin lavo alenu. Basically, God made this commotion that they have all these horses and all these chariots and right, and the camp of Aram says, oh my God, massive army is coming, let's bolt, let's get out of here, right? Why? Massive army, because the king of Israel hired foreign armies to attack us. They know that the king of Israel can't do it with his own army. They're under siege, but maybe somehow he hired foreign armies to attack us. That's what the people of Aram say. So they get up, they run away, they leave their horses, their donkeys, they leave the camp as is, and they just go running. Now, by the way, in the previous perek, when Aram's soldiers are coming to Elisha, so Elisha has a student who's standing there. He's like, oh my God, they're coming, they're going to attack us. So the message Elisha sends to this student is, don't worry, there are more with us than there are with them. He opens his eyes and he sees horses, chariots surrounding Elisha. No? It was a vision of horses and chariots. Now, they also have a vision of horses and chariots that drives them to leave the camp. Now, usually, if you have to desert a camp, do you leave your horses behind?
You use the horses.
You use the horses to get out, no? But isn't this interesting? They left their tents and they leave their horses behind. Why would they leave the horses behind? They are so scared. This vision that they see is so intense, right? That if someone's coming at you with the spear and he's ready to attack, you just bolt. So they leave the entire camp behind. Now, these Mitzora'im, Pasuk Ches, they come to the edge of the camp, they go into a tent, they eat, they drink, they take out gold, silver, clothing, they hide it, they go into another tent, they take stuff out, they hide it. Now, Gehazi, what do we know about Gehazi? He loves money. He wants money. So what is he doing next? This is awesome! Cash, right? He's taking money, hiding it, like putting it in his cheeks behind his ear, out of the way, but right? Money! Right? That's what's going on. And then, suddenly, we're not acting properly. We're doing something wrong. Today's a day of good tidings. We're going to hold our peace if we tarry till the morning. They'll find out that something is wrong. Let's go back to the Jewish people. Let's tell the king. Now this is an amazing thing. Gehazi and his people, after filling up, you get an impression, by the way, that all the stuff that they kept with them, they say, okay, let's go and we'll tell the king. We'll tell the king that there's this massive camp of Aram and we can go and take whatever we want. No? In the Sefer Musar HaNevim, they comment that you see from here, the sin of someone who's, how bad it is to sin against the community. Gehazi, such a lowlife. No? A slime bag. But, like Gehazi is one of those people the Mishnah in science says has no chelak in Olam Haba. He's a real slime bag. But, he won't do something to hurt the entire Jewish people. So he's going to run and tell the king, right? Hey, go. There's this whole camp. Go and get stuff.
But
so
he's also afraid that it's going to be found out that he didn't.
So they say, Umitza'anu avon, punishment will overtake us. What type of punishment are they worried about? They worried about divine punishment?
I don't know.
Maybe not. Maybe yes. Yeah. I don't know. My guess is it could be divine punishment, because who's going to find them? Remember, the people in the city, right, they're suffering from the siege, just scared to death. How are they going to know? Right? They could have been happy eating their riches forever. Oh. So they go and they call the gatekeeper. They say, we came to the camp and no one is there. All that's there is horses and donkeys, everything is tied up. And they call, the gatekeepers call the king and they tell the king what's going on. The king gets up in the middle of the night, he tells the servants, I'm going to tell you what Aram did. Aram knows how hungry we are. They went out to the field to ambush us. They're going to attack us. They want to draw us out of the city. So one of the servants came and says, okay, let's send 5 horses. Right? Let's get 5 horses. And we will see what's going on. So they send out the horses. Not 5, they send out 2 for some reason. Why this is, I'm not sure. Right? And the king sends the king of Aram, go and check it out. And they go and they see that the whole road is full of Milayah Begadim Bekelim Asher Shlichu Aram Bechavzam Vayashuva Malachim Vayigidol Melech. They basically, they send out a few scouts, they see, you know what? They're gone. Camp is empty. So then the king sends this captain who he leans on, and Vahamelech Hifkid Et HaShalish Asher Nishana Yado Al Hashar Vayirmesu Ha'am Vashar Vayamot. He appointed the captain, but he's standing at the gate and everyone just tramples him on the way out, like Elisha said. Remember, Elisha said, you're going to see what will happen, but you won't benefit, right? The king says, okay, you stand guard, we're all going to go to the city, right? He stands guard, right? It's worse than being in the Hajj. You know, the Hajj, like, has the worst tramplings ever, right? It's worse than a British soccer game, even. Right? Huh? Right. There was one bridge or something in Saudi Arabia on the Hajj, like thousands of people.
Oh.
Where did they have an article about this in the Atlantic, like last month or something? I don't know, about just like the experience. It's awful. To be trampled to death is like, so that's what happened. This guy is trampled to death, and then, right, it happened exactly like Elisha said, that Satayim Sa'arim B'Shekel, once Solat B'Shekel, the price of everything went down, and that's exactly what happened.
That's exactly what happened, everything like the Navi said.
Now let's just take one point from this story, which I think is worth focusing on. Who are the people who brought about the salvation?
Who brought it? Aram has a siege. People are dying. They're eating each other. It's so bad. Who did the salvation? Who did the Yeshua come through?
Well, in the first place, it came from God, because God's the one that scared them off.
Got it. Okay, but who are the human messengers for God's salvation? Gehazi and his sons.
If that's who they are.
But whoever they are, these people are Mitzora'im. A Mitzora is a lowly figure, no? The messenger of God is a Mitzora. The Gemara in Sanhedrin in one place says that if you want to see Mashiach, he's hanging out with the Aniyim and the Mitzora'im. Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik, the Kornel of Racha, used this as a defense for Zionism. You know, many people attack the Zionists. They said, how can you tell me that the establishment of the State of Israel is God's work? Look at the people who are doing it. They're not religious. They are people who have no real sense of Jewish values. How could this happen? So Rav Aaron Soloveitchik said, look at Malachim Bey's Parak Zion. Look who the salvation came through. It came through these people who are, right? Here, let me read. The miracle of the deliverance of the inhabitants of Shomron was carried out through the medium of four lepers. Physical lepers, yes. Above all, spiritual lepers. According to our sages, the four outcasts were none other than Gehazi and his three sons, who were afflicted with leprosy as a penalty for their spiritual heresy. The Rambam, in commentary to the Mishnah, describes them as cynics and scoffers. The first argument as to how any relief of the Jewish people could be realized through the medium of apikarsim can easily be rebutted by the precedence of deliverance according to the people of Shomron through the medium of four lepers. This episode shows that no Jew can be excluded from the grace of God. Yisrael afavishachata Yisraelhu. There is an innate tendency to altruism, even in the heart of spiritual lepers. It also shows God does not exclude any Jew from salvation. He may designate even spiritual outcasts as his messengers of relief and deliverance for the people of Israel.
This is
Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. We can't ignore the significance of the establishment of the State of Israel simply because the Jews who stand a substantial distance from any form of observance and mitzvahs were at the forefront of founding the state. The fact that non-observant Jews are in the forefront today is a penalty for Orthodox Jewry's failure to play the most important role in the formation of that state.
When did he write that?
I don't know. I'd have to look. I don't know.
Fascinating.
But this episode really says something. We have to recognize that Hashem has many shlichim, and sometimes it's the people who are least expected. Now, this I think is also similar to that idea that we were saying about the king, though. People who are bad have an element of good in them as well. And that's one of the lessons. The king, right, is bad. Right, he wants to kill Elisha. He's the son of Ahab. He's not a good man. Yehoram ben Ahab is not a good man. But he rips his garments, and underneath we see that sackcloth. He sympathized with people. These Mitzora'im, who we know are money-grubbing individuals, but there's an element of good in them. They have brought about the salvation. And that's something that we should never forget. Okay, so that's the point I wanted to mention. Thank you for listening. Have a good night.